My life has been a tapestry of rich and royal hue, an everlasting vision of the ever-changing view, a wondrous woven magic in bits of blue and gold, a tapestry to feel and see, impossible to hold. Once amid the soft silver sadness in the sky, there came a man of fortune, a drifter passing by. He wore a torn and tattered cloth around his leathered hide, and a coat of many colors, yellow, green on either side. He moved with some uncertainty, as if he didn't know just what he was there for or where he ought to go. Once he reached for something golden hanging from a tree, and his hand came down empty. Soon within my tapestry along the rutted road, he sat down on a river rock and turned into a toad. It seemed that he had fallen into someone's wicked spell, and I wept to see him suffer, though I didn't know him well. As I watched in sorrow, there suddenly appeared a figure gray and ghostly beneath the flowing beard. In times of deepest darkness, I've seen him dressed in black. Now my tapestry's unraveling. He's come to take me back. He's come to take me back.
The absolutely wonderful Carole King and Tapestry. Oh, how I was harking back to the 70s as that was playing. We'll let her finish, won't we? Well, hello and a very warm welcome to all our listeners in the Totnes and Dartington area. This is me, Julie Mullen, 102.5 FM Sound Art Radio. I'm broadcasting from Totnes today, normally from home, but we are in a studio on 4th Street. So maybe we'll be looking out the window and waving. So if you are listening on your phone, have a look up at windows around the 50s number. So we've been away. We've had the summer off, and oh my goodness, what a hot summer. A fantastically hot summer and brilliant Totnes Festival. I hope you all lingered long at the festival. I saw the marvellous poet Jackie Juno, who really rocked the house at St Mary's, supporting the Palestinian singer, and Matt Harvey too, who was there. I also was part of Jazziant, Bevan Pete, doing their thing at St Mary's. I seem to be focusing on St Mary's, but as we know, people took to the streets. There was orange rolling, for goodness sake. Absolutely fantastic fun. And the Mansion House, I felt, really came into its own. Just so much, a huge programme with David Delfont on the piano, lots of different mayor, a lovely woman, local in Totnes, who was playing the piano, but she's a poet and she's a painter, and my goodness. And I saw lots of things going on there, and I liked their food programme as well. Of course I did. Love the food programme. So yes, we're back. We're back for 3 weeks only, and then we'll sort of work it out with Sound Art what we'll do in the new year. But I'm really excited. Now, Sarah Louise Connolly is normally our go-to interviewer on the Kay Cole Show. But she's on the naughty step because she completely forgot, which I love, because I said, Sarah Louise Connolly, don't you worry. We're going to wing it. We're fine. So today I have a very, very, very special guest, and I'm incredibly excited because I just had to look at her website and I sort of dissolved into, this is completely magnificent. So I have Rima Staines in the studio, and I've egged her on a bit because I said, oh, Rima, we don't have an interview. Would you be able to do some poetry? And she said, yes, yes, yes. So if I'd really pulled my socks up, I would have actually got her to perform or read rather her own poetry. But if you want to commune with the artist, listen to the poetry that they cherish. So we'll be doing that at 10 past. Let's have something. I rather like Judy Collins and a bit of Both Sides Now. Okay, here she comes. Come on, Judy. She's ready.
Goes and flows of angel hair and ice cream castles in the air and feathered canyons everywhere. I've looked at clouds that way, but now they only block the sun. They rain and snow on everyone. So many things I would have done, but clouds got in my way. I've looked at clouds from both sides now, from up and down, and still somehow it's clouds' illusions I recall. I really don't know clouds. Dizzy dancing way you feel when every fairy tale comes real. I've looked at love that way, but now it's just another show. You leave them laughing when you go, and if you care, don't let them know. Don't give yourself away. Something's gained.
Judy Collins and Both Sides Now. And I love that line, clouds, illusions. It really, that song really reminds me of my childhood. Our house in Liverpool was full of song and musicals and, of course, Beatles. Well, not them personally, but if my sisters could have arranged it, they would have been there. So, yes, it was a house full of music and theatre. Because we were always messing about and doing some strange thing or other. Now, my guest this morning, Rima Staines, is a multidisciplinary artist, predominantly a painter, but we should be getting into that all of that at 20 past 11 this morning. But she has very kindly agreed to share with us the beautiful words that she has and, I suppose, leans into poetry. Good morning. Sorry, it's going to be a bit noisy.
Good morning, Julie. It's lovely to be here. Yes, she's completely put me on the spot and asked for poetry that I hadn't prepared. But luckily, as I am half of a publishing house who happens to publish books of poetry, I had some at my fingertips. So I've dug out a couple of my favourites from the books that we publish, and I hope you'll enjoy them. The first one is by Pauline Peters, who is an African-Canadian poet who lives in Toronto. And we've published a book of hers, a collection of poetry called The Salted Woman. And it's very, very beautiful. If you're interested in any of the poetry that I'm about to read, you can go and have a look at Hedgespoken Press, which is www.hedgespokenpress.com. And buy the books and support our small enterprise. We are also based in Totnes, just up the road from where I'm sitting now. Okay, here we are. This one is called The Ones. And I tilt my ear towards the ancestors, those long gone, the ones who live in the wind and in the quiet earth, the ones the poplar trees whisper about, the ones the sparrow sings to in the morning. They are the ones who murmur history in your ear while you sleep. They are the ones who teach you how to ride the wild black nightmare. They are the ones who swaddle you in prayers even if you don't believe. They are the ones who worked so hard they toughened and became transparent. They are the ones who never sat down. Days when I am not in the home of myself, I welcome their rough palms and their violin voices. I welcome their slow dances and their desire to see us all fed. I welcome the quick song of their rock-hewn patois, and I welcome their cut eye and inability to suffer fools. I welcome the way they swim in and out of time, as if in the blue sway of warm seawater, and I welcome the warrior gods who followed them here across the ocean. I tilt my ear towards the ancestors, those long gone. Let them be long remembered.
That was absolutely beautiful. Oh, I'm so sorry. I apologise to listeners for the noise of the winding microphone stand. I loved the violin voices particularly, but all of that, that was really wonderful.
It's wonderful, isn't it?
Absolutely. How did you find that, Pope?
We actually... we put a call out during the Black Lives Matter protests for writers and artists of colour from wherever in the world to submit work to our small press, because being a very small enterprise in the corner of Devon, we obviously don't have a diverse range of voices amongst our artists and authors at the moment, and we're still growing, and we didn't know what we could do other than maybe grow our group of authors in that way. And we had a lot of submissions for that call out. And Pauline's work was definitely stood out and just grabbed us straight away as being extremely beautiful. We feel very lucky to have got the chance to publish her work. This collection arrived in our inbox, and eventually became a book. The cover of the book is also by an Iranian artist called Samaneh Atef, who is based in France, and if you go and have a look on the website, you'll be able to see her work too, which we felt really matched with the feeling of the poetry, which sort of describes the mythic feeling of a woman's body as land, and as you could hear in that poem, the ancestors woven in between things, between our lives and in dwelling in the land. It's a really stunning piece of work, and we're really, really proud of it.
Yeah, that's very beautiful.
Yeah.
Shall we hear another?
Yes. Yeah, so the second poem here I have is by Tom Hirons, who's my co-conspirator in Hedgespoken Press, and he has many poems available through Hedgespoken Press. Many of you might have heard sometimes A Wild God or come across it. It's a poem that has reached the far corners of the world, and all sorts of people contact us and say that this poem has touched them, and they've heard it in all kinds of places. It's read at all kinds of ceremonies, and really, really moves people and cracks them open. So, yeah, and it was also the first thing we published when we became a press. So that's probably the place you will have heard of him. But I'm going to read a different poem of his, which is called The Lapwing Stars. And it's one of my very favourites. I think it's very beautiful. The lapwings have it, no doubt, seen across the field. Their green-black backs are the measure of mystery for every colour as yet unseen by the boy. The thin seam of coal by the brook, beneath the hump-backed bridge of brick and moss over a slow lap of water, that has it. He mines in tan clay with a spoon, slick with rain, as sure of riches as an oil baron or a king. The coal has it, but it is not black. The pheasant in the spinney has it, half glimpsed, gold as a fairy tale thread. As the boy steps between the trees, time peels away like leaves of bark, century by century by century. A fossil in the Suffolk flint has it. The old figure in the bright field is it. Cadda Idris magnifies it. Forebears in calves' hides, they have it. Their waterfall vigils make it afresh. Finger touch, breath join, skin meet, that remembering kindles it. A fire made of flesh and lightning. The boy watches wheat stubble burn. A hawk chases a blackbird through the hedge. The ground cracks open endlessly. Memory is this thing's echo. The tip of its tail, the print of its fleet foot, the fur in the bramble, the musk of it on a gatepost in winter. I know it through the bright star belt, seen clearly in the night of my fast. I am a vagabond, drifting from it like a rudderless boat, numbed, thick, graceless as a tripped foot. But in that moment of remembering, lapwing, coal, pheasant, fire, fossil, mountain, waterfall, wife, I know its place in heaven. I shake my head. Time colludes with the stars. The centuries emerge, and the lapwing calls, Peewit. Peewit, peewit, I sight it through the gathering dark, push at the water with my idiot hands, and steer my clumsy craft towards it.
Wow, the language in that poem is just so sublime, isn't it? You immediately step into almost the swim of that poet, of Tom.
Yeah.
You really feel it touching you.
Yeah, he's a magician with words, it's true.
I think he's a magician, and so are you. I thought you might play one of your songs, the music that you've chosen.
Great.
For the programme.
Yes, today. Julie also put me on the spot to choose music, like 3 minutes ago. So
I sound horrible, but honestly, I'm a kitten. Meow! Which one are we going for? We're going for the...
So the first tune is one of my favourites to play on the accordion. I also play the accordion. This is a Turkish tune called Tekezort Latmasi. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it correctly. By a band called Şikoyok, who are a London klezmer Balkan band who are absolutely brilliant. And if you get a chance to go and see them, I really, really would.
Thank you.
That song, I feel as if I'm around a campfire with you and I just want to sort of dance.
Yes.
Is that what attracted you to the song?
Absolutely, yes. And it's got a very wonky rhythm, which for some reason I love to learn to play those difficult tunes that aren't 4-4.
Yeah.
That was Teke Zotlat Mase, played by the amazing band Shakoyak, who are based in London.
Thank you for saying that, because I would have trouble with that. The pronunciations. Yeah, I'm often squeamish about.
I can't guarantee that I said it right either. Oh, but
no, I've lost the question. No, I haven't. Right. Okay. So let me just get my. I'm a little bit too far from the mic. But Rima. So we have Rima Staines in our studio today, and not only is she a painter, but she also makes sculpture, music. She's a writer. She draws. She's involved in printmaking and theatre and puppetry and books and arts and publishing. And when I look at your website, I hadn't met you before. I've seen your photographs. I've seen your Facebook page. Of course, looking at the website, you get more of an understanding of who you are. But today, I really want to delve deep.
Great.
I want to find out lots of different things, but let's start with quite a simple question about the work you're involved in at the moment. Mm-hmm. In terms of, well, I'll leave it to you.
Okay.
What's overpowering you?
All sorts of things. Yes, so I have a studio at the top of town where I paint, and Hedgespoke and Press also has an office below, on the floor below. So I'm always juggling many balls, actually. And I'm just going to take these headphones off because I'm being distracted by my own voice.
Okay. Should I just remove them completely?
That's all right, I'll put them on again.
Okay.
The technology of radio interviews, this is new to me. So I am working on a number of things at the moment. I'm working on a portrait commission for somebody. I have various pieces of work on the go, an oil painting on wood that's halfway there. A lot of my work is it feels very tender when it's in its creation, and it's very hard to show it to anyone until it feels like it's reached the point of readiness. Mm. I also have a collaboration with Sylvia Lindstedt underway, which I'm very excited about. Sylvia and I have collaborated before on a book project where she's an incredible writer from California who created a whole series of stories based on my paintings. So instead of the book being written and then the illustrations being done, it was made the other way around. It was a very strange and wonderfully strange experience, because it was like she'd gone inside my dreaming space, the place where I create paintings from. And that collaboration made this amazing book called Tatterdemalion, which was published by Unbound in 2017 now. So it's been out a few years. But we are in the process of collaborating on a very top secret project, which I'm very excited about. But she's been in Devon for the last few months, and we've been conjuring and concocting, and hopefully it won't be too many months before we can share what we've been up to. But there's something about the combination for me of magical language and visual art, not only in book creation but in the making of animations or puppetry, where and music as well comes into that. I think that's probably why I have so many balls to juggle, because I see a kind of potency in the crossing over of the Ooh. Disciplines. Certainly, yeah, it feels like something that I kind of can't help doing. Since becoming a mother, I've definitely had more projects half done in my studio. In the past, I used to sort of meticulously work through one thing until it was finished. So at the moment, I have some larger works actually on the go in my studio, and some smaller works, and then various publishing ideas, and then collaborations like this. So yes, it feels like I'm a bit of an octopus at the moment.
It's a good way to describe yourself. On your website, it says the power of art to change things.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like you really are a person that is propelling forward, changing things. How did you meet that writer from California in the first place?
She came across my work, actually. I used to write a blog for many years when I was living in Scotland, and then living on the road. I was travelling around the country, living in a converted truck and selling my work on the streets of various towns. And I wrote about all of that as I went. I would love to keep writing a blog, but I have children and not so many hours in the day. She came across my work and felt a real kinship. So she sent me the first piece of writing a long time ago now. And I was totally blown away by it and encouraged her to keep going and write more. So that's how Tatterdemalion was born.
You're sitting right in front of me, but what you're talking about feels like all possibilities.
Mm.
It's like you live this all possibilities. There's so much I want to sort of ask you about, but we'll just go through a few questions that I have sent to you in via email. But I wanted to ask you about the commissions. You touched on it,
mm-hmm.
actually just now, but how much of that work do you receive?
So I do. People do write to ask for commissions, and I willingly take on commissions if they feel resonant with my way of working. It depends what somebody is asking me to do. I don't like to have a too rigid and detailed brief, because if somebody is asking me to paint something very specific with a thing over in the left-hand corner and this over there, and you know, it sort of kills the magic for me. So if someone's willing to commission me with a very loose idea and then let me do my thing, that's exciting, and I'm really open to that. Anyone is welcome to get in touch and chat about that.
And I know for people who are listening to this programme today and probably marvelling at your capacity to make art and to publish, and we haven't even touched on the theatre, the puppetry and all that. But what sort of guidance would you give them, a fledgling artist out there listening to this programme? So, for instance, your commission, how do you work out what to charge somebody? Or how do you work out what to sell your work for?
Yes, this is an ongoing question for me as well. If someone can give me an answer, then I would love to hear from them. It's really hard as an artist because it's such a nebulous thing, what art is worth, you know, and that's it's very much dependent on what someone will pay for it and what the art world, which is a strange beast that I'm not, you know, I still don't really understand. You know, obviously there's things like how many hours go into it and how many years you've been honing your skill, but also, you know, how much you feel it's worth. And so obviously my prices have changed a bit over the years, depending on how much I want to do something. You know, I have done quite a few exchanges in the past, you know, so I've done painting in exchange for tents and, you know, all sorts of things in the past, so I am open to that as well. But it's a really nebulous thing, and it's a conversation that I have with the person who's commissioning me. But as far as your question about art changing things goes, I really believe that for me, that my work isn't just making pretty pictures that hang on a wall. My business is something entirely else. I'm making alchemy, I suppose. You know, it's alchemy in its true sense, in that art of all kinds, not just paintings, can change people. It can you know, affect you deeply inside, and that's important. It's an important necessary part of our culture, of our community, you know, to have the people who can see out beyond, who can feel things from elsewhere, with the capital E, and communicate that in a way that is really affecting to people is vital. We need it. We really, really need it. You know, even if people think they don't understand art or they don't like poetry, it probably just means that you haven't seen or heard or read art or poetry that has touched you, that really speaks to you. But it's definitely out there.
And what you've just said about the relationship with the work, I think, is really vital, because it is so easy to be on the periphery of all of that and just think, well, you know, oh, I'll put a red there, or I'll do a what's it, instead of, I mean, I find that my maddest paintings are usually, and I look at them and I go, oh my God, I have no idea where that came from. But I must be tuning into something, because I'm not being directed by an interior designer or whatever. I'm sometimes I look at the work and I think, ooh, gosh, I wonder what that's about, where that came from. But in a way, what you've said to me and to the listeners is actually, it is part of the embrace. It is part of the moving forward with art, is the alchemy, as you say. And I mean, I think, and for anyone who's really involved in art or any of the actual areas that we're talking of today, please do go to Rima's website, I mean, even mid-show, because we're going to put some music on, and have a look at exactly, you know, I think it will actually support the conversation.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. I was thinking of that, actually. Yeah, it's rimastains.com. That's RIMASTAINES.
Right.
And you can have a look at all sorts of paintings there.
Oh, what's next on your song list?
The next piece of music we have is Ajde Jano, which is a Serbian folk song, which I also play on the accordion and really, really love. But this time it's played by a Finnish accordionist who is an absolute virtuoso. I not long ago discovered her and was totally blown away. She's called Teija Niku.
So tell us about that artist.
Yes, I don't know so much about her, except that I'm in awe of her playing. And you're totally blown away. And I love that tune.
Yeah. So now I'd like to know about a favourite piece of work that you've produced?
This is a difficult question to answer, but certainly there are favourites or pieces of work where I feel that I have touched something, and that the piece within the piece is a real it zings. It's got a power to it, and I notice that other people see this as well. So that the other people's responses to my work are fascinating to me, and certainly that, you know, there are a few that are, you know, the prints always sell the most, or people, you know, when they see the original, they're very moved, which is, yeah, an amazing experience for me. But I suppose I wanted to talk about a piece called The Alchemist, which is a large watercolour, actually, and I have it hanging up at home above the fireplace in a frame which has doors, so it's a little bit like an icon. And it's a painting which, if anyone is online, they can go and have a look at while I talk about it. It's a painting of a young woman sitting in the centre of an arched frame, and above her, sort of around the nimbus of, she has a halo, and above that is a whole host of musicians. And then below her, she's wearing a brightly striped coloured dress, and below her hem at her feet are many pots of paint, of pigment, and she's holding in her hands her own heart, and from the musicians, from their instruments, come ribbons of music which come down through her dress. They become the colours in her dress, and they flow like blood through her heart, and then they make their way out through the bottom of her hem into the pots of paint. So for me, it's speaking about the power of art to change things, exactly that, the alchemy that she is herself an alchemist as an artist. She's taking in the music, and the painting came originally when I was sitting on a train some years ago, listening to music on my headphones and drawing in my sketchbook. And I had this realization, because music is a really big part of my creation process, and a way for me to open doors in my spirit. I choose particular pieces of music to do that for me, you know, a little bit like someone might use a particular mind-altering substance. Mm-hmm. Music is really mind-altering for me and takes me to certain places. And so I suddenly realised that this piece of music was made by another artist, the musician who wrote it, who created it. And their creation, their piece of creation, had gone into me and inspired this drawing that I was doing on the train that day. And so I sort of had this realization about the muse, if you like, the magic that is within the creation of art, that gets passed from one artist to another if we work with other artworks in this way. And so in this painting, her heart is being opened by the music. The music is creating a particular alchemy in her, changing one thing from another. Ooh. To another. And then it's becoming the paint with which she will then create another piece of art that will change somebody else, and so on and so on and so on.
Can I ask you about the doors?
The doors, yes.
So why would you close them, and why do you open them, or do you...
I keep them open generally at home, but I'm also really fascinated with Orthodox iconography, and I feel like in the icon painting in the East, there's still this recognition that art has power. Like, literally, the piece of art is powerful. People recognise it, you know, not people who are art aficionados, but ordinary people go to an icon and they will leave offerings there because they recognize that piece of art has power, as if there's an indwelling spirit there that is the Madonna or whoever, that is deeply powerful to them and important. And there's something in the particular way that icons are painted, and the practice of icon painting, the adorning of them as well, that for me means that these are deeply alive pieces of artwork, not dead paintings that hang on people's living room walls. And for me, that's what art is for. It's you know, actual magic. It actually does something to people, and it has this purpose in it, as part of our lives, as a spiritual object or whatever. You know, it can perform many functions. But so I suppose in my work there's often this feeling of an iconographic figure in it, whether it's in the framing or in the presentation of the figure.
Would you let go of that painting, or is it yours?
This is a good question, because there's a few of those paintings that I mention that really had the zing in them, and I haven't been able to sell them yet. No, I may at some point, but who knows?
I want to see it. now, I think it's time to sort of broaden out and think about... Now, you were born in 1979,
I was,
in London.
Yes.
And your parents are artists. Tell me about the teachers in your life.
Yes.
They may probably and will do include your parents.
Yes.
Tell me about them.
Well, yes, I would say of all the teachers I've had in my artistic life, my parents are the greatest. They are both sculptors, Pamela and James Staines, and they were creating work for the whole of my growing up. So I was surrounded with this sense that being an artist was a real job, unlike many artists I know who've had to sort of fight against that, against the idea of it not being a proper job. You know, certainly it's not a secure one, and you know, I've had to wrestle with poverty all my life, but I certainly learned from my parents not only the practice, the skills, and the ways of creating imagery from them by watching and learning from them, and seeing the sculpture created in our home. My dad had a workshop out behind the house, but also the sort of honouring of it as a legitimate and important thing to be in life, an artist. I went on to study book arts and crafts at the London College of Printing, which was nowadays it's just part of the London University of Arts, but my study was more of a sort of obscure book based. I did a lot of illustration, and I learned to bind books and printmaking and so on. It was a lot more craft-based learning than it would have been if I'd studied fine art. I've gone on to create, because stories are so fundamental to all of my work, that somehow books had to be in there somehow. So the fact that I've gone on to create a publishing house is not really a surprise.
No.
Yeah.
Now, let me take a walk with you. I need to walk through your life. If you could tell me a little bit about your muse. Tell me about how you've just talked about the beginnings, your parents being both being sculptors, and also the backdrop of your life, so creative, and also this feeling that it's almost a responsibility that you had to ensure that you walked the path of the artist, and you know, whatever that meant. So just tell me a little bit, how did this all develop in the way of your website, which I can see that you are the multidisciplinary artist. I'd love to know how the music, the puppetry, the making, all of that started. I know we don't have masses of time, but I think it's really essential that for people to understand how you broadened out like that.
Well, yes, I suppose I've always been quite stubborn, alongside having the whether you call it a muse or what, I don't know. The thing that that I'm sniffing out along the path, the thing that my nose is following, is a strong, rich seam of something. And it's really was unavoidable for me to you know, I couldn't have done an office job. I would have gone totally mad. And I think I knew that quite early on. And so I had to figure out, okay, so if I'm going to do the thing that I love, then I need to find out how to pay the bills with that. I'm still figuring that out. But I have just about managed, you know. And in terms of the vast array of different types of art that I've created, it's really just been doing what I wanted to do. And I don't suppose I've thought deeply about, you know, that I'm jumping from painting to puppet making to music to it. They've just been things that have really called my heart. I'm quite a heart-led person, and that's, you know, that can be a powerful and exciting thing in your life, but it also can be disastrous because you leap and then think later. I think that they're all strings in my bow. And like I say, this thread of story is so important that sometimes using different disciplines to tell that story feels like it makes it deeper and more potent. You know, for example, when I've made animations, I've made tiny little cutout drawings, which I move fractions of a centimeter frame by frame, and then, you know, that's put to music, so that there's the drawing in there, there's the theatrical side of it, and there's the music all together. The same with puppetry, and the same with bookmaking. In the way, you know, you've got multiple disciplines working together to tell a story, and I feel like stories are so important to us as humans. They're like the you know, we are story making creatures, and that's how we make sense of life, and it's how we make sense of things going terribly wrong as they are in the world. You know, if we have stories to explain what was, what could be, what shouldn't be, it distills it in a palatable way for us, and it helps us to move forward. I think that we all know that so really deeply in our bones, and we all respond to storytelling in a way that feels very familiar.
Mm. I actually had a look at the animation on your website. Well, I went to the YouTube.
Uh-huh.
I found it really moving. It was really beautiful with the fish and the doll.
Oh, yes.
And I loved the simplicity of that animation as well. And the music that came into it.
I would love to do more, but they're obviously extremely slow pieces of work, especially if you're doing it all by hand. I mean, these days there are digital tools that make it easier, but... yeah, that's one of the things on my long list of things that I'd like to do next.
And was that the accordion that you were using? Or?
That was another... So the music was not by me. In both those animations, they were by other musicians. So I was creating the animation for the piece of music.
And one of the pieces, one of the drawings I was really sort of fascinated with was the spoon-eared child. Wow. I mean, but so much of your work is that, oh my God, I'm just sort of...
It's quite strange, isn't it?
No, but I loved it.
In a good way, yeah.
Absolutely loved it.
Huh.
Where does that image...
Well,
how did it appear for you?
These images, all of these images and these characters that are in my paintings are sort of just there. I think, you know, I've never struggled with artist's block in the way that I can't have ideas. They're always... thousands of them just waiting for me to sit down and pay attention, and the characters just seem to come. That's not to say I don't struggle to work, you know. If my heart is struggling, you know, if I'm sad, then I can't paint. But it's not a lack of ideas that stops me. And the spoon-eared child, I suppose I've always been really I felt a kinship and a care for those who are odd and on the edge of things and who are excluded for whatever reason, but particularly because of the way they look. I grew up with a sister who had Down syndrome, who died when she was 14, but I think because I was her older sister, I was always fiercely protective and indignant about the the way that other people looked at her for being different. And so that stayed with me really deeply. And I've also cared for other children who were disabled in various different ways. And I feel the odd ones are very beautiful to me. And I want to paint them, and that's the odd ones. Are, you know, when I say that, I mean that in a really respectful way, and I mean, you know, oddness in all sorts of ways. You know, I suppose I would count myself amongst them.
I don't think so.
I mean that genuinely, that we are a bit odd if, you know, if our brains work differently, or if, you know, we don't fit into a mainstream in a particular way, and I suppose many of my paintings are sort of illustrations from that liminal place. It's and those sorts of crossroads where you might come across the odd ones, which you know you do in stories as well,
and those
characters are always the ones with the power and the answers to difficult questions.
Mr. Rumpelstiltskin, for instance. Now, we are running out of time, sadly, but I wanted to ask you, because Kerry Priest was meant to come this morning, but she's unable to make it. What did Kerry see in Chagford that she wanted to link with you? What was this theatre project? Oh, you can't remember.
I can't remember.
I think it was the theatre and the puppets, as far as I know.
So the press that I've mentioned also has a theatre arm to it. It's a travelling storytelling theatre built on a vintage truck. Mm-hmm. So that's Hedgespoken. You can also check that out online, hedgespoken.org. We travelled with it for a few years performing. So there was storytelling with music there was some puppetry, there was some artwork, there were all sorts of wondrous and magical and hedge-dwelling things to be found there.
Were you an actor within that?
Yes.
Singing?
I didn't know. Singing is something that I'm not quite brave enough to do publicly yet, but I was playing accordion, and doing some puppetry and art, and you know, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So now we know what Kerry Priest was rubbing her hands.
I think that must have been it.
I think so. Yeah. We have run out of time.
Oh,
I want you to go out with one of your choices. Let me just say, first of all, thank you so much. Thank you.
Oh, it's a pleasure to talk to you, Julie.
Well,
thank you for having me.
I've got a very beautiful book of your postcards, and I can't tell the listeners. I mean, the quality of the print, of the paper, of the words, everything is so beautiful, and it speaks of you, Mima Staines. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, too.
What shall we play to say goodbye to
everybody? So the last piece is called Old Jimmy by the Langan Band.
Okay.
And I really love this song because it speaks of grasping the moment and living your life as fully and beautifully as you feel to right now.
Nothing on his feet but only a smile upon his face, and his eyes are full of grace, and they say you